Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to a microdose. I'm Kush.
I'm Kai.
That's Kush and Kai.
And we're... Here they are.
We're just, we're still in the Phantom Zone, and we're banking some episodes here, and in the tradition of last week, you got to know a little about me.
Phantom Zone's a good name for it.
Yeah, I agree.
At an undisclosed location.
Very undisclosed, very, very nondescript, very, very unable to mention much about it.
Dick.
We're learning about our podcasters this week, and you got to know a little bit about me.
In part one.
My t-shirt is still a little sweaty because I was in the hot seat.
You were going. You were in the zone.
Yeah.
We hit UPS. We talked about wrestling.
UPS, wrestling, date all books. The good stuff. But now the focus is turning on to you, Kai.
Indeed.
Tell us about your life. Where do we start? Where are you from?
I'm born in a house, 9:43 a.m. approximately, October 11th, 1982. It was a home birth. There were several midwives around.
Wow.
This is on tape.
And was this all premeditated? You were supposed to be born in the house?
Yes. Okay. They wanted very crunchy, green, hippie-ish instincts to have a natural birth. But the camera is placed at a not flattering angle to capture all this. And there is a moment towards the... into the work. It's a little... The birth is... It's coming. It's happening. But then there's a moment where something's... stuck. We later learned that my umbilical cord had slipped around my neck.
Oh, that happened to me, too.
My father had to reach into the birth canal with his finger and kind of unhook it.
That's so awful.
I could get out.
That sounds awful. They had to go C-section on me.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
They probably don't have that on tape, though.
No. They definitely don't have that on tape.
Good stuff. And then we watched all this thing as a family.
You watched it.
Together.
Oh, my God.
On my 10th birthday.
On your 10th birthday.
Indeed. So we moved from 22nd and Lake over to the Excelsior District on Prague Street. Mm-hmm. And that was different. Instead of being on Lake Street and whole candy bars being given away for Halloween, there were... You'd hear a couple gunshots at night.
The only time
a lot of Raiders
ever seen
fans.
Anyone
Those
get
things
shot
aren't
was in the Excelsior.
Yeah. So there you go. But otherwise, nice family.
Okay.
Family-oriented community. It was good. Went to Clarendon. It was a bilingual Japanese English experience that was right in the middle of the city. It's like right under Sutro Tower, the one on Twin Peaks, the red and white one that you'll see. Mm-hmm. I used to fantasize about an airplane hitting that when I was standing in the schoolyard. I was like fourth and fifth grade.
Did you just see La Bamba?
I did not, but actually like standing in a school. He, Richie Valens...
Keeps having the flashback to him being in a schoolyard.
He was in a schoolyard, and there was an air crash overhead, and a piece of debris fell and killed his best friend. And then everybody who doesn't know this, he would go on to later die in a plane crash. After having lived an entire life not flying, being terrified of airplanes, he was talked on. So there you go.
But no fear of flying for Kai.
Yeah. Well, I mean... I've made my peace with my maker. That's what growing up on the West Coast, contemplating what earthquakes might do.
Okay.
It was just like, oh, you could die. You'll be in the bar tube, and then it'll shake, and then you're gone. It's like, oh, okay. You had to make peace with that.
Yeah,
I could die at any moment.
I get that a lot when I'm in garages.
Oh, dig. Yeah. I feel
you go under one of those grooves, and you're just like, I would only have maybe about 20 minutes of air in this. Assuming I didn't get crushed by the support.
Oh, yeah. Or Home Depot and, like, the lumber section. Oh, like, Lord. Oh, this is going to end badly. Especially for those warehouses. A lot of, if the shaking is hitting the building in, like, flush to the wall, it could just make the walls fall out and the roof fall down. which will be exciting to experience. Anyway, so after contemplating that...
let's move forward. Are you experiencing any artistic skills? Any sports?
Or what are you doing? I wish I had done more sports. I was on a little league team.
Okay.
That we actually won our all-city division. I was the second baseman. It was good stuff. I caught the only like outfield fly that season, and I think I hit a triple in the final, which was good.
Nice.
It wasn't off a tee, but it was coach pitch.
Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha.
And then the next year was full like opposing team pitch. We did okay, but my schedule only allowed me to attend like half the games.
Interesting.
So it wasn't as camaraderous as I liked.
The coach not giving you grief about that?
No, he was just happy. I think he was just happy. He's like, you're young. They just show up and do the thing. Anyway.
Okay. When do you move on to middle school?
Oh, right before that, you had asked about artistic inklings.
Yes.
My grandmother, on my father's side, was a fine artist. A painter, but not a traditional one. She worked in something called mezzotint, which is you take a large copper plate,
mm-hmm.
and then you take these little engraving tools. She comes from a family of goldsmiths and jewelers
okay.
in Germany, and so they would work with these things. But these are similar. There's some similarities in these tools, but she would get down to the grain of the copper, and with these like dental tools, almost would just do these gradations, like mm-hmm. cat cross, hatch cross, bigger, bigger, and to these. Magnificent. And then she would paint that, and then you press a canvas over it, and then you have a painting.
Interesting.
With depth and color and feeling.
Wow.
And she was the foremost mezzotint artist in the world. She married her teacher, who was 60, when she was 20, because he needed a new wife. His wife had died.
Oh.
And so he needed things to be taken care of.
Of course.
But she demanded, she agreed, as long as she could still take classes and do that. And he said, yes, but it vexed him. This is my grandfather, who I never met, because he was 60, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But he was like, yeah, sure, but regretted it because she became vastly more popular, wealthy, and acclaimed than he did. There was something called the, I forget exactly the name of it, but it's an Italian artistic prize that's awarded by this board of their art historian, what have you. But she was feted and then invited to come live at an artist residency in Florence,
mm-hmm.
which my dad remembers visiting her for stretches at a time.
Okay.
But no, definitely lots of, and she moved to New York, brought him, my dad, when he was 14. He actually lost his accent just watching American television.
That'll happen.
Yeah. And from New York, bounced around, got a place in Carmel, and then later was swindled out of that house, and then retired to Switzerland.
Well,
Geneva. Quite a life.
And that was all your grandmother and grandfather?
Yes.
Wow.
My father's side. My mother's side, they were interned and met after World War II.
Okay.
In Chicago.
Okay.
Anyway, so back to me. Oh, some artistic inklings. I remember drawing, lots of collages, poetry in elementary school. Okay. Lots of poetry.
Lots of poetry.
Koans, haikus. And then, yeah, middle school sucked. I remember having mono and then it not being super diagnosed. And then I was out for like 2 months and taking a bunch of classes and been kind of depressed, I think. I forget exactly the decision to go to School of the Arts, but that was because I was doing a lot of video stuff.
Okay.
And that was fun, just making.
And when did you start doing video stuff?
In camera video, like shorts, probably when I was like 12. And
what kind of camera did you have?
I started with Super 8 because I was doing like stop motion animation, and then I moved up to, there was like an old school semi sub beta, like, you know, over shoulder recordery one.
The thing came in like a briefcase.
Absolutely. It was intense. Yeah. And you could plug, there was a wire, it goes right into the you put it inside the dummy tape that goes inside the VHS. Do you remember those?
I've seen them. I've never worked with one.
Oh, yeah. There was a trip.
And they always look just like, just so in, just, no.
Yeah. Bad. It's so much effort for that. But I did always like all the, I had a bent for electronics and toys and whatnot.
Inconvenient. Thank you.
Yeah. Jeez. Some of those things looked like all of that to play the last, like the graduation, what have you. And there's like a big tripod for the TV. So doing videos and whatnot, and they had a video department there, and I had looked at Washington. I think there was like 5,000 kids in that school. My sister went there. I think she was, I don't know if she was valedictorian. She was like co-valedictorian, homecoming queen, president of six clubs, and a good GPA. You know what I mean? It was like she was doing great over there, but I was like, I don't know. I'm in a game.
Yeah.
So School of the Arts, it was for me, a smaller artistic experience. Definitely writing through high school picked up. I wrote a novel, a fantasy novel, probably like 800 pages.
That's great.
Yeah.
Have you done anything? Have you published it?
I don't really remember what's in it.
Wow. Do you remember where it is?
No.
Is it still
lost
intact?
To time. No, it's gone.
That's so sad.
There are many projects that I have like, oh, yeah, no, I put a bunch of time. I have no idea. It's gone. It's gone. Mm-hmm. And then if I, again, I think we referenced this in the last show. If I read that, I may need to pluck out an eye. just to punish myself.
Just palms just
stupid.
Sweating like and cramping up.
These
like,
themes are stupid and self-referential.
What was I thinking in 13?
Ultimate evil. Who cares? Oh, it's so hacky. Oh, yeah, it's a reveal of the dead. It's a bag. Oh, forget it. Anyway, somebody's killed with a shovel. It's very angsty and weird. And but it was like traditional low fantasy of like, no magic. There's people trying to make stuff happen across terrains. I've always been very into like the atmospheric kind of storytelling, and that kind of revealed itself in those paces.
No, between video, audio, writing, which of those do you like better?
Then or now?
Now.
Now. This is actually I'm actually going back to school for this. And that's the thing. I haven't been able to answer that question, really.
Okay.
That's why it's all of them.
Gotcha.
I'm going to the Digital Worlds Institute so I can blend 3D and gaming or creating a little Bluetooth dongle that can reveal the contours of the street to you in IR on like a lens behind your glasses. Well, anyway, there's little gadgets and things. Or doing room scale stuff. Just the idea where it's like, hey, style up this... You know, we've got an antechamber here in Disneyland. Before it turns into Star Wars World, there's like a little Indiana Jones antechamber thing. It's like there's a corner. It's like design an effect here. You walk in, it catches a thing. There's a game. You could whatever. It's like I don't know what it is. I just being part of a tapestry like that, I'm fascinated by. I don't know what it is, but it leverages the storytelling and other elements in there. So, yeah, also growing up, I mean, there's so many different pieces to like. My parents were both part of something called Shintaido, which is a martial art.
Oh, exciting.
And it, the person who founded karate.
Miyagi-Do karate?
One of his, not Miyagi-Do, but it was, not Miyagi-Do, but he also, one of his main students started this school. So it's a branch of karate. All right. And it has different elements to it. He was a founder was a also an actor, and there it's interestingly in a lot of the warm up routines there's a lot of like good back body conscious stuff and knees and how to work through that. I remember being the warm ups being so integral to that whole experience, but that actually gave me a lifelong like kind of a good way to stretch slash body jazz, not have cramps, but. Yeah, that would be, I mean, just a small slice, because you're very familiar with Ocean Beach. We would show up, I'd be 6 or 7, we would show up at like 5:30, sun's still coming up.
Oh, it's 5 in the morning.
People are dressed in white gis with the tabi, and they have bow staffs, and so they'd, you know, it'd be different every time. It's like building a little curriculum, but there'd be elements, the same elements of it. So they'd stand and salute the sun, there'd be a thing. There'd be, you know, after the warm-ups, there'd be, you know, you'd walk through your paces for your kata, for your weapons. I wouldn't be doing this at this age. I would later get into more classes. I would just be sitting on the beach watching. And then they would break into forms. You know, they would have up, and then there's a thing called Tenjin Gosho, where they would raise up and lift their whole body, and the spire of that bow is getting like 13, 14 feet in the air. They would charge and run as fast as they could down the beach like they were going to pierce something, screaming at the top of their lungs.
Wow.
Quite a thing to behold. But, yeah, a real martial arts community. And then you'd go to, you know, there'd be classes, and the people had set this up all over the world, so there'd be folks coming to learn under our masters and go off to other things. There'd be things called gashkus, where you'd go and... There'd be a gathering, and people would attempt 4 different ranks in their different disciplines, and there were different. Yeah.
What rank did you finally attain?
I never tested up. No.
Okay.
I was too afraid at the time.
No charging on the beaches for Kai.
No. Though I have to say, there was like an age where it got. We were like right at the crest of where it was biggest, I would say, in the Bay Area, and then as it sort of changed and, you know, got less popular for its own community, the bulk of teachers, of sensei, were of that same era. And so they're still, I think there's still, many of them are still winning with us. A great community. Great shout out to you guys.
Yeah, so
high school.
Back to high school.
Yeah.
Was any projects that stood out to you that you remember
there
fondly?
There was a couple. There was a horror one that I did some really good practical effects. I wish I could find that. But just, there was no story. It was just that we were able to, because, you know, during the season where you have to have your final, ours was called Media Night, where you put on like a show. It's a bunch of shorts strung together. Mm-hmm. And we were just doing like, it was about a killer, right? And I found this big novelty hunting knife that was fun. But it was just getting, you know, stealing little scenes from other movies about like, oh, there was a noir thing and I slip through. We track this character. They slip through at night. The clothes dryer is billowing this foggish clouds and sort of the street light is hitting it light. And you want to up it with the fill light in the back and then have our hero kind of pop through the smoke. It was just really just playing with the visual effects. But then we had Gibbs too. And we had neck-breaky sound effects and things going through eyes and whatever. I mean, you know, it was rudimentary on some levels, but it was like really fun to get into that. But I think the most impressive thing that actually got a hushed awe over an audience was, I don't know, Buster Keaton must have done it at some point. Because you watch a lot of old what have you, so I probably lifted it from somewhere. But at the time, it seemed original. We had these big shelves in the class, these big cabinets, so you could sit on them, and they were like 10 feet in the air. We put a camera up looking at the floor on that. And we put the you put the chairs so our backs are on the ground, but it looks like we're sitting at desks. And then so we go through and we're just talking for a while, and then we start to toss stuff, and then we discover the gravity of it, so I'll just place something on the wall. And then we would stand up, right? And then the reveal was finally like, whoa, he's kind of getting off the ground. And then it just rolled backward up the wall because I would just roll. And it got people went, oh, like it had that moment. And then this was only like 2.5-3 minutes of this, too. Yeah. But it was like, yeah, the early Vine YouTube. Nice. I was getting, instant likes, guys. It was great. There was a lot of videos I made. A lot of videos after that.
How many
that.
Videos do you think you made?
It's hard to contextualize just like for fun, because I probably made 30-40 with friends and what have you.
Okay.
There's an easily 20 for all of those classes. And then there's a series of things that I actually forget. They're kind of out of order, but started Seven Hill Media, where we were trying to do we were advertising that we did viral videos and marketing. And we actually got a couple clients for somehow, but we had no idea. They were like, so how much do you need? And it was like, we had no idea. We literally had to say, my buddy Dan Steiner, and he was like, and I had to say, well, why don't you just give us a moment? We went out into the hall. We're like, I don't know. We had no idea how to value anything. We had, the dog that had caught the car. And so we made, it was for a company, it was a rudimentary sort of Netflix clone for mostly documentaries and progressive films. And they were just like, sure, we'll give you like $5,000 to like make little ads and videos. So one of them was, I thought was clever, was it's a bunch of people. I forget the premise, but it's a bunch of people at a party, and they all have flags of what country they represent. Mm-hmm. There's Angola, the USA's. They're talking about Turkey over there, the thing, and then the US shows up with its girlfriend Israel, and then somebody else shows up with their girlfriend Palestine. Whoa. And it's a little awkward, then the boyfriends start beefing and arguing, and this is a 30-second clip. Okay, so it's all set up, they go out and argue, maybe it's 35, and then Israel and Palestine are hanging out and talking. No, it's more like a 50-second. Anyway, they're talking, it's cool, they're laughing, we have a quick montage, they have drinks, they're talking to friends, and then it's they kind of like, there's a laugh and then a hand glances a shoulder. It's like, whoa, what's going on? And the two chicks, and then they kind of lock and we get the thing. And the music swells to a kind of a beat. And then immediately they're in the bedroom and they're making out.
Wow.
And it's like, Unity's beautiful, everybody. Ironweed Films. And they were like, this is great. I remember a female producer walking by while we were in the editing bay. And they were like, boys made this. And then there was another one where it was like, it was towards the holidays where we had a bunch of people. We set a table for Thanksgiving, and it was a just one tracking shot. It was just this tracking coming along the table. So it was probably 10 people at a long table, and there was a fully stocked... We cheated it out so you could see the table a little bit, mm-hmm. and like up. And so the people are... The first person, it's a chick. She's crying hysterically. And the second one, it's a guy, and he's just got his hands in his... Mm-hmm. This is a little vignette. You get to me, we had to do this 6 times. My eyes were, like, completely red. But I had to smash a pie into my face.
Wow.
And it'd be the full cream thing dripping off. And we got all this, and, like, something else is broken. And then the very last one is, just before the end of the table, is 2 feet sticking up. And then the person holding a gun, and as you get there, smoke starts to coil out of the gun. And it's No Place Like Home for the Holidays is playing, which is a song we didn't license, because at the time, there was no one to chase us down. But, yeah, and then it said, yeah, politics can be volatile. Discuss with care over the holidays. They like that one, too.
Wow.
There were others they didn't like. Like one where I played, we were worried. I played a part of a gay couple, and we were worried about... it was just we were watching something on the news, but we went through our lives, and it was a little too. It was too it's too much for them. Anyway, so there was that, and that culminated with us having equipment and know-how to put together a short film called Walled Aid. Which is about Waldo, who went missing. Mm-hmm. So this is a concert.
The Where's Waldo character.
Exactly.
Yes.
This is a concert. Mm-hmm. For to find Waldo. And I don't
remember. Let's raise the funds so we can hire someone to find
him. I don't remember if we ever actually addressed that plot line, but there were 2 detectives that I played one of. We were looking for Waldo. We're like interrogating people. Mm-hmm. There's some details here. There's a magical fairy.
Okay.
There's a sock puppet that's crying.
Sounds good.
And then it culminates with the usual suspects reveal that one of the characters was Waldo all along.
Oh, wow.
Can
this be seen anywhere?
I don't know. I think there's got to be a copy out there somewhere, but that was really fun. And then the guy who played my partner in that, Jesse, who's awesome musician and writer, journalist, he's a proud Chicano American.
Okay.
And... he got me a gig. He interned with The Onion.
Okay.
And so he got me just the intro, so I applied. But I got in, it was cool as a contributing writer for The Onion. And that was part of the reason I moved to New York, to be closer to their writer's room. And I never jumped the hurdle from contributing up to writer, but I was the longest tenured there.
Oh, wow.
I was there for, I think, for 6 years.
6 years at The Onion.
Yep. Just contributing headlines, mostly for the Onion News Network, but they'd have us pitch ideas for merchandise, regular paper stuff. Yeah, whatever you're there.
Now, the Onion News Network, is that the podcast or is that the Comedy Central show?
It was the video. It wasn't the Comedy Central show. It wasn't the IFC show. It was Onion News Network. It was online.
It was a video podcast.
Yeah, well, they're not.
Oh, I remember.
There was a podcast. Oh, yeah. They did push it through that feed, too. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, that first year was big. Like, there were a lot of big big ones that got moving. One of the fun things that... I don't know if it is actually out there. I've never looked. But there were a bunch of videos that they made that were too much.
No.
That they just were like, yeah. There was one. It was like about how it was just cheaper to use glue traps at the U.S.-Mexico border. And so they cut there, and it's just people going like... help! And they're like stuck, and they're like just reporters like, well, this new implementation, blah blah, and they're like, yeah, but they showed those at a they collected all those and showed those at a bar one time. It was really fun.
Now, is the Onion movie being made at this point, or
ooh, I think it had already come out.
Okay.
Yeah, where they do no they had worked on, because I remember hearing there was pieces of one that they had made. Mm-hmm. Then they tried to make it something else, and that didn't work. And then Onion movie. So I actually forget the timeline of that. But that was right around the time the Carol Kolb, who was the editor of the ONN at the time, and a number of the other luminaries of the Onion went, and they're on. I think Will as well. They're on the Aristocrats.
Okay.
They're on discussing like the evolution of the joke. Yeah. And that was around that time, I think.
Okay.
Maybe a little after. Or before. Anyway, it was a run.
Okay, so from The Onion, where do you go next?
Well, during the onion, I got, because yes, trying to like claw my way in and not being good enough, took a bunch of classes at the UCB, mostly sketch, met some interesting folks there. Lamorne Morris, a young standout who was on The New Girl.
Okay.
And other stuff. You would recognize him. He was in that class, and he was fucking talented then.
Nice.
Still talented. A bunch of classes there, putting on shows. Putting it, guys, if you like putting on shows, even a little, go put on a show. It's fun. I remember I was part of a show I was in out of 14 sketches. I think I was in 11.
Wow.
Mostly with speaking parts. That was cool. Mm-hmm. And I think I remember there was a prostitute robot that got too soiled, so they were trying to clean it up. But that was the caliber in which my classmates were rocking it. They got a lot of laughs from Neil, one of our teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So doing that, and I was also working for, gosh, I don't know if anybody remembers this network, Mojo HD, with a great show called Three Sheets. Which was a this is the early, one of the early drinking slash travel shows, which I highly recommend, and then was copied and
honestly,
redone.
I remember just the logo and just seeing the random clip.
Mojo HD. I actually really don't remember that many other shows there, except for the one that I wrote for in Deep Cable, The Circuit. It was a tech comedy tech news show. Okay. So think Joel McHale with 15 minutes, and he was Indian. And that guy was funny. Although we should have gone with an assumed name or stage name instead of trying to make the joke about his name being long.
All right.
I think I could still spell it. Deepak Amanthapadmanabha. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on, everybody. I can also spell the middle name. Deepak Kalundalore Amanthapadmanabha. I'm going to have to make a list of this episode.
It's a lot of syllables.
I think he'd be proud that I can fucking say it still. One of my co-writers could not accomplish this task. But we got to do in-studio stuff and have guests. We had Michio Kaku come on, and some of the Stern gals played Wii bowling with him. That was fun.
Nice.
You know, we interviewed we got to go into, there was a company doing like Mars technology, so we got to go look at their rovers and whatnot. And yeah, it was just fun. We're writing for that. Again, very little money. I was living in Spanish Harlem at the time. A fun detail about that was, what was Spanish Harlem like at the time? A Christmas Eve, I had realized that I hadn't left the island in like 5 months. Okay. I wasn't traveling back that year. Mm-hmm. And then I was writing something, and a firefighter was like, just knuckling, like, hey, I gotta clear out, clear the building, you gotta clear out. So I shuffle out, a crack addict had broken into the basement of our apartment building and lit a mattress on fire after they fell asleep.
Terrifying.
But no, that's exactly the neighborhood. I remember coming up out of a subway like the third day I was there and seeing a rat eating a pigeon. I was like, the circle of life. The beauty, the splendor. It strikes me. So Mojo HD, The Onion, UCB, you know, trying to make and be. Then I meet my wife working at a Broadway company. And she was producing what was the Tony-winning revival of August Wilson Fences.
You're like, I'm Kai, and I'm like, I'm Mrs. Kai, which is really weird because you guys aren't married yet.
Right? Yeah. Kai, Mrs. Kai. And then she got to interview, we were trying to cast what eventually became the Denzel part, but she did fall in love with interviewing and trying to attract Idris to the project. It was, I can only imagine, but you get to hang out with some fun people.
Yeah.
And
that was for Fences.
That was for Fences. And then from there, yeah, we had a kid, and that office they had opened in New York specifically for this revival, because Carol Shorenstein Hayes had done the original and gotten, or no, she got the original one for that with the voice of Darth Vader himself.
Yeah, Edward James almost.
Exactly. Let's just keep moving. So that office closes, and we take a gig in Florida, where she's working in a building. Mm-hmm. That doesn't exactly work out, and we're not near family. And it's not that fun. Although I got to say, everybody, I'll just admit it right now, being a house husband was the best. Because she goes off to work, like I'm making a little breakfast for my son. And again, we're going to, on the leash, we'll toddle down to the pool. You know, I'll clean up some stuff. It'll be great. And then she went into daycare, and then I had to pretend to, like, do stuff. I got a CNA. I got a CNA certified. That was exciting.
What does that mean?
Certified nursing assistant.
Okay.
So, and then I externed at a hospice center.
Oh, yeah. That's so fun.
Everybody, I got to tell you, pee Smells worse than poop. In mass. I'm just saying, it does.
Okay.
Okay? I speak from experience. And then vomit beast both says.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yep. I just know that from direct experience. I met a man who survived sepsis.
Oh.
He should be dead. He was written off as dead. His body was, like, infected and killing itself. And anyway, he moaned every few seconds. Like, he was just in a world of pain.
Yeah.
That sucked.
Sounds awful.
Anyway. Yeah, we had to wheel him out at the end of the week. Other complications got him. Okay. But he survived that. I didn't know that was possible.
How long were you at the hospice center?
That lasted 4 months.
4 months. And then where do you go from there?
Then we moved to L.A. Because that other job that my wife took was not as advertised. But anyway, it was a thing. So from Florida, where do we go? Los Angeles. Because Kai is raring
to... City of dreams.
Kai is raring to apply his trade. I'd already done a couple podcasts at this point. This is... God, we're moving in 2013, 2014, somewhere there. We go out to L.A., and I'm working 30 jobs. Holy shit. I'm doing PA stuff. I'm hauling down to, like, the San Diego Convention Center at 5 a.m. to do an SAP conference. And, you know the rigmarole? Exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
They're hauling and doing... then I was doing some writing contracts. Had started a couple other podcasts. And then in L.A., trying to put a show on early. But then we hit upon doing a podcast for Crackle, which is Sony's free service. And after, like, I think the eighth episode, Sony reached out to us, the marketing department. They're like, hey, let's have lunch. I'm like, seriously? It's like, yeah, DM me. DM me a phone number. We'll set up an appointment.
Now, are you uploading videos to their server? Is that what's happening?
Just audio.
Just podcasts. Okay.
Not to their server. No, we're through iTunes. We're distributing it ourselves.
Through iTunes, gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. It's going out ourselves, and then they're like, hey, how's it going? And we got pulled into their orbit doing jobs for... Like, I got to work the Joe Dirt 2 red carpet. Extravagant, I know. But, you know, interviewing David Spade and Colin Quinn and, you know, some of the other characters. And, like, they had a bunch of Playboy models in that movie. In person. Like, some of them, like, it's unreal. Like, and you can't describe just the smile and the hair whipping around and the heaving bosom. That is, everybody, if you stand close to it, it's hot. It's like emanating, like, oh my gosh. Anyway, it's like a different class of creature that they brought out here, especially standing next to David Spade.
Yeah.
Which I was just like, it's amazing.
They all tower over him by like half a foot.
They do. And they hoisted him onto their shoulders and walked him out of the parking lot as everyone cheered. That was fun. Just doing a series of interviews and was fun. Who's that guy? He's got a show about fixing plastic surgery. He's like... Plastic Surgery 911. It's on one of those networks that you probably have never seen, Bravo or have you.
Unfamiliar.
He's married to former housewife of Orange County. I forgot her name. But I was interviewing his wife. It was a Crackle original that was like, oh boy, they tried. It was about a jury. Sequestered, I think it was.
Oh, wow.
It was all right. It had some, you know, they tried.
Yeah.
But I was interviewing her, and then her husband walks up. And he's like, oh, yeah, he's in the show. I'm like, yeah, sure. Anyway. And he's like, oh, tell me about the show. And I was like, oh, the third one, whatever. And I'm trying to interview her. And he eventually goes like, you haven't seen it. Right in the mic. I'm like, no, I did not. And I laugh and we turn and go. But still, it was like, God, dude, do you have to do press every few seconds? I guess that's literally why I'm here. But anyway, just barging around. And then sister-in-law ran a... script transcription company.
Okay.
And I got farmed out as a writer's assistant to Quentin Tarantino.
Oh.
So that was fun.
No, what's your how long does this job last?
I forget exactly. It was probably in a run of total 6-7 months of time.
Okay.
Most of that time is spent waiting.
Just
waiting. Well,
hurry up and wait.
If you book a certain week or 2 weeks, a block of time, and it's like, oh, you were supposed to be working, but he's still in con because he've got a house and some friends, so he'll be on for another week, but we still need you. So we'll have your holding rate, which is half of what your normal rate is, and you can't take other jobs. So it's like, So you're hamstringing me? It's like, yes, absolutely. Yeah. And it's still cool to work for Quentin Tarantino. Mm-hmm. He does all of his work on a 1984 Smith Corona word processor, which has three lines of the black, white, like an old calculator, like a solar calculator that you all had in a drawer somewhere. Mm-hmm. It's that, and it has a big, it's not a floppy disk, it's just a chunky disk that you've, most people have never held something like that. Like that specific, mm-hmm. the to a word processor disk.
I dig it.
And it holds, I think it's 8,000 characters.
Wow.
And so each chunk of, each disk had a chunk of script, mm-hmm. and editing it was a nightmare for other people. He knew how to use that thing like an instrument, like a concert pianist knows how to use a piano. It was like, why don't you just use a synthesizer? You hit buttons and it's easier. It's like, that's not the point.
Yeah.
He would remember details of things changed, or I'd corrected a spelling on something once or moved a comma. And in hundreds of pages, he'd go like, the script would come back and he would have circled right where it was. Like, put that back. He would remember. Wow. Fucking genius. Nice guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he was super polite. Mm-hmm. I didn't spend that much direct time with him. Probably like 3-4 sit downs. It was most, you know, very business.
Okay.
He was working at the Hateful Eight at that point, and not even for a movie adaptation. He was just redoing it to be read by a number of the folks actually ended up being in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so it's just the writing and the retyping and staying up late, and you, for a word processor, it doesn't all combine into one major file. You mm-hmm. put in that chunk of 10 pages and hit print, and it goes line by line, goes da 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 da, like it's auto typewriting something, and you gotta do that. So I still have the rack and slide noise, all night. And then you drive the thing back up at like 4 a.m., hand off the edition, or a courier comes and gets it, whatever is more convenient.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, you're released. Yeah, that was something.
That sounds exhausting.
Dang.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah, there's so much mess. I think I've had like 35 different jobs.
Mm-hmm. What's been your favorite?
Probably my favorite was during that LA stretch. My wife was working for a live entertainment company,
mm-hmm.
live entertainment touring. They were going to bring experience from the African savanna to you.
Mm.
Maybe the Amboseli Elephant Reserve. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But they had patented a like 6K double hemispherical camera. They were going to... Anyway, think of something, the footprint the size of like a couple... Cirque du Soleil tents.
Gotcha.
That they would do a thing. She was working with them, and I sold them a game idea, a mobile game idea based on what they were doing. And mm-hmm. I got to pretend. I sold it to them for employee shares and whatnot. So I have a bearer certificate or a contract saying like if they get funded, I get something. But alas, they almost closed. I think it was 28 they were trying to hit, but they couldn't get there.
Mm.
They got some, and they got some offices, some interning. I'm rambling now. But that was super fun to design a game and work in live entertainment. And we were housed in a studio that did, they built entertainment parks and roller coasters and all of those, like, all of the rides that have, like, this turns on a track, and then you see a screen, and it looks like that, and actuators, but that's their whole deal.
Wow.
Like, they pre-visit, they fabricate stuff, they make the thing, they do all the tech stuff, and I was just, it was like a pig in shit. I was like, this is the best. And I got to go over and talk to all of their different department heads. Like, there was a designer guy, because there was, like, a card game component, an online card game component with it. I know it's fucked out, guys. This was a few years ago. And I was like, no, we should use, like, local artists who do of the elephants and kind of, like, splash like this. And he was just like, oh, this is the best of it. Just working with other folks who are at their high level of, like, this is your department. Fucking kill it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that was alluring. So, yeah, they didn't close funding. And then, you know, some of the other jobs dried up. And we moved back up to the Bay Area. Because, again, being down there with now, we had the sister-in-law. But mm-hmm. it wasn't like we could, you know, we could drop the kid off. But it wasn't, you know. We need grandma. Give me grandma. Give me some aunties. Give me just that. Mm-hmm. So we came back to the Bay Area, and yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We're gonna table this now, but before we go, what's one goal you want to do with this podcast, Cushion Kai?
I think it's hard. I mean, I enjoy it so much because it accomplishes so much for me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have somebody to in the middle of the night, it's just sort of like, I think that... I think they're going to remake Training Day. Like, it's a, you know, there's concerns. For this podcast, I don't know. It's already changed over the time that we've been there. Like, I had different designs or things I wanted to do with it. And then I feel like my relationship to social media has changed. So, like, I don't even know. I'll have to think about that. We're going to go for part three. I enjoy recording the things and having the pieces.
Okay.
I want to do a live show.
I do, too.
I think that's the goal. The
goal is a live show?
Live show.
That's going to be a little hard.
That'd be good.
Coming up.
Other details that I might have skimmed over.
We won
the Peabody.
Yeah.
With the ONN. I was on staff. Mm-hmm. That's good. So I have a small percent of a Peabody.
There you go.
That's something. I have a kid, as I had mentioned at different points of the story. Mm-hmm. She likes horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
Little Kai.
Little.
And we met in the Phantom Zone. Mm-hmm. And I have a dog.
Yeah.
He's old.
Oh, God, he's the CEO.
Yeah. He's getting a haircut.
Okay.
I'll send you a picture. He'll have the puppy cut. He's been roaming around my sister's backyard getting nettles on him.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's troublesome. Good stuff.
Well, that's been our microdose. You've gotten to know a lot of Kai today.
Get to know a podcast. Holy crap.
Yeah. Oh,
Jesus.
What's the timer say there? 40? Yeah.
40.
40 is a good spot to end it.
I think we'll cap it there.
So... You know where to follow us.
Used to be a woman. I mean, yeah.
Don't follow us. Follow us. Don't follow us. Subscribe. Unsubscribe. No, please subscribe. Cushion Kai.
Leave us a nice... Cushion Kai.